handle the truth.
Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
Everybody, to another episode of the Righteous Brick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 12:32 p.m. Eastern on May 10th in the year of our Lord, 2021. Had the green tea, had the walnuts, ate an entire pint of hazelnut chocolate chip Talenti last night. So we're back to start Groundhog Day, folks. The diet is Groundhog Day, but we have a new ally assisting me in being steadfast in this diet, and it's the fact that my right knee feels like it has a degenerative disease. It's in so much pain. I had a show. I had two shows last week, so that I can report to you. I murdered in both. I think I attribute my general lack of rust. I had the one show in South Jersey where I felt a little rusty. But my sense of pride and my sense of vengeance, I think, just got me in order. But I think having done so many videos and so many cameos and so many podcasts over the last year, even though that wasn't stand-up, although I did do probably 10 different sort of stand-up type shows on Zoom, I think my comedy skills are just sharper than the average person's, average comedian's skills might be, because I was constantly using comedy skills, even if it wasn't necessarily strictly stand-up work. So I think it's sort of like the equivalent of if I was a basketball player and nobody could play basketball, but I had access to like a Papa Shot at an arcade and a treadmill. So technically I'm still not playing basketball, but I'm doing some of the things that other people may not be doing to keep some of those skills slightly tuned in. So, Tuesday's show at the 13th Step, I destroyed, which felt so good, even though it was kind of awkward being in a bar. I kept my mask on most of the time, just, you know, as I referred to it on Pete Dominic's podcast, which I was the guest on Monday. If you're interested, Stand Up with Pete Dominic, a good daily sort of news, culture, politics, humor show. I think I referred to it as my Lib Cuck Blankie. Because it's, you know, it felt weird just going, you know, even though I'm double vaxxed and I think most people in the bar were vaccinated, it was a little bit of, it's going to be an adjustment, just feeling comfortable in the presence of lots of people talking closely. But I absolutely destroyed that set and it felt so good. And I even forgot to do a couple of bits that I wanted to do. And then Roy Wood Jr., great comic, who was on the bill, He saw me, told me great set, and then asked if I was available to open for him at Governor's in June. So he said, are you trying to close? Meaning like get headlining work. I said, yes. But, when someone, you know, you want to headline your own show, but when somebody of that stature wants you to open and it's a local show, you know, Long Island. Like, there is literally no... my pride is in my work, but that would be stupid pride to say I headline. What have I been a headliner for, what, 3 shows so far? I'm not going to pass up working with Roy Wood Jr. So hopefully he DM'd me, and hopefully that's, I'm going to confirm with him this week that I can just sort of start promoting it on my calendar. But that's cool. And once again, as soon as people saw my Trump impression in the large enough number, it became a sensation. I do 2 shows, one in South Jersey. My second show is in New York, and a big-time comedian is in the audience, is on the lineup, sees me, and asks me to open for him on a show. So this is one of those, this is once again exhibit 5,000 of what I would call, if I can just get somebody to see me do what I do, that's all I need. But it feels like in this industry, people want someone who, you know, they want a young talent they can mold, or they want somebody who's demographically in the zone so that they can, like, make the pitch as simple as possible. But that's good news. And I was having a horrible day that Tuesday, a horrible day. And it was, you know, had that show gone poorly, I'm sure I would have been in the absolute depths of despair going, I came into the fucking city for this after a day. And the problem I had last Tuesday was... most of you probably know that I'm a Utah Jazz fan, and I what I've been hoping to do is line up some shows in Salt Lake City sometime during the hoop season and turn it into sort of a paid vacation. You know, it wouldn't be a show where I'd be saying, it wouldn't be a gig where I'd be saying, I need to make X amount of dollars. It's more like, hey, will this pay for my tickets and airfare to Utah? Great. I'm okay as a, you know, because if you can take a $2,000 vacation and have like $1,500 or $1,200 of it paid for by a comedy club, that's a win-win. And then, you know, who knows how much merch you sell. But the point being, Utah, Salt Lake City is one of the few cities where I would perform at a loss if it worked right. So I email the owner there, and I give him my spiel, my email, which was, you know, hey, these are my numbers. This is my experience. This is where I've performed. This is who's written me up. You know, like two paragraphs of credits, metrics, press, you know. And then I throw in at the end of the, you know, towards the end of the email, I go, and I'm also a big Utah Jazz fan. I know this may sound like pandering, but I've been a fan for 33 years. And I get quite a lot of interaction from surprise jazz fans who become fans of my comedy, who tell me to come to Salt Lake. I'm not pretending like it's 10,000 people, but you know what? If you have 2 or 3 shows in a weekend in a, you know, 200 seat theater showroom or something, you know, if you can sell 50 tickets just based on you being a jazz fan, and then obviously there's going to be some other people who just find me funny, and then there'll be like that built-in comedy club audience. So I mentioned it not as like a, I am a big jazz fan and that will guarantee tickets. It was like a 9th bullet point that was just like, hey, and then you know what? In addition to my bona fides and my numbers, this would also maybe be a little cherry on top. Okay. So we have an exchange. He offers me the gig for a price that just is not acceptable to me. And I'm not mad about it. I'm just like, let me see if I can maybe get him up to, basically I wanted $500 more. Or a promo code on the tickets so that if I did sell 50 tickets to like specific fans, maybe I get $3, you know, maybe I get $5 a ticket and that takes me up to $1,250 or, you know, but at least we're working and then I can start to tap into all the people I know in Utah, through Twitter and through jazz stuff. And who knows, maybe that actually generates, and then it's a win-win. I'm only bringing in more people who might not have otherwise gone that weekend. Comes back and says, can't do it. We had a couple of exchanges, and he says, I'm sorry, this is the best I can do. And he also booked me not at the club next in the vicinity of the arena in downtown Salt Lake, but like a suburban, what looked like a suburban shopping mall annex club, which if the money was right, I'd do it, because it wasn't like 100 miles from Salt Lake. It was like a suburb of Salt Lake. So I'm assuming in a car culture, people would have no problem getting there. But in his final email to me, like when he was just saying like, yeah, I understand if you don't take it, you know, but this is like the firm offer. And it was only for 2 shows. Unfortunately, I was hoping it was for 3, but okay. So the problem is when your flight costs, you don't want your flight being 63% of your gate off the bat. Now you get a hotel, but you don't want it being, you don't want your travel to a gig being really more than 30% of your gig. This would have been 63%. So long story short, it was $1,000 for two shows, which if that shit were on the East Coast, I would have taken in a heartbeat. But I didn't, I declined it. But what really frustrated me at the end of the email, and I'm going to inquire with some Utah people to see if there are any independent venues in Salt Lake City that I could book, you know, like a 200 seat theater, you know what? Because for me now it's just about, yeah, I'd like to perform there because people have asked me to. And if I can make money to offset a trip to see the Utah Jazz play, you know, like pick out a week where they have like 2 week games in home games in a week and do a show either in between or at the end of those days. And Utah's a beautiful state. So, but at the end of his email, he said to me, a lot of comics, like the net, granted, this is like our third or fourth email in the chain. So I have not mentioned the Utah Jazz since my very first email, which was, like I said, a cherry on top. But I guess sensing that I was going to reject the offer because he, you know, was coming back with a counter offer of exactly what he had offered the first time, he said, a lot of comics are jazz fans, but it's no guarantee that you'll sell tickets. And I was like, well, that felt like if I was giving him a cherry on top, that felt like a needle in the asshole. I had to calm myself down, as you can tell, like, because I felt like it was an unnecessary, unwarranted, and sort of out of the blue quasi dig, like as if I was like delusional or something. Even though, you know, what I was really saying to the guy was, oh, I've been on Mark Maron, Adam Carolla, ESPN Radio. I have 140,000 followers on Twitter. I have 6 stand-up albums. I have fans in Utah. Oh, and by the way, cherry on top, I'm also a Utah Jazz fan and have a little bit of a connection to some people in Utah through that. It wasn't book me because I'm a Utah Jazz fan. And I just thought that last comment, I had to calm myself down so that I didn't reply angrily. But, you know, basically, you know, if I can get an independent theater in Utah, if anybody here listens to this show and is a Utah resident, I'd love to come. I think Utah is a beautiful state and I love the basketball team. So I'd love, this is more about offsetting a vacation, this is a critical piece of my stand-up future. But it was just, and it was one of those things that I realized. And that same day, I was emailing another booker who has already booked me for something. And I didn't realize in their email that they had offered me a 2-venue offer. I misread the email. And I took 1 venue, but I still had a month to go. And I thought, oh, you know what? Let me see if I can get that second venue, like a bang, bang, sort of show. So I wrote back saying, oh, I didn't realize you were offering me 2 nights. I felt like it was just 2 nights at 2 separate places. And I said, can I still get, you know, is there enough time for me to get that first venue, which of course I would have gone for originally. And the reply I got back, you know, a few hours after I just had this final exchange with the Utah club, the email I got back was, why don't we just hold off on City X? And we'll just go with City Y, parentheses, if it goes well. And I was just like, holy shit, what the fuck is going on? Like the tone, the needlessly like cunty tone of bookers. What, I mean, maybe they're having it's they sync up like women's periods and they all have the worst day of the month when I email. But I was just like, what is with the tone of these, like just say no. Just say, I don't know why you have to like remind me that, like, you know, it's Hartford, folks. It's not the person at Hartford, but it's the Hartford Funny Bone gig. And I was just like, I had an opportunity for Albany. I'd been getting bugged by several upstate people. I don't mean bugged. I appreciate it. I like to know where fans are, but there isn't a city yet that I've had somebody tell me, oh, you got to come here, that I haven't been trying to go there. But what I'm realizing, and I've complained about this a lot, but this made it sort of visceral, and why I needed that show Tuesday night so badly to go well. And it did, like I said, I don't doubt my skills, but I needed it to not be a mediocre show. And thankfully the audience was hot and I was fucking murdering up there with the new stuff. So that feels good. My theory is like agents have all the power. Like agents either have the star clients or they have a new client, but they leverage the star client to get the new client work. And club owners just basically are like, if you want comedian A, you pay this. I doubt there's like a negotiation process. And I'm starting to think when the few lucky ones of us who are unrepresented and trying to break in based on all the metrics we're told we need, which is skills and fans and social media numbers, you start to go, oh, I'm the person you can shit on because I'm not connected enough. I'm the person that you can talk down to while I'm maintaining a respectful trying to, because you don't respect me as a business person or as somebody trying to advance their career. I'm just an annoying comedian. Now, a jagoff with no talent and no, but who has a powerful agent, you must respect them because it's the agent's power you're respecting. It's not the comedian. But with me, it just felt like, oh, so there's just no respect. Like the respect has to be, you know, not to sound like a fucking mafia or a gangster movie, but you know, as Snoop Dogg said in Deep Cover, I'm about to take my respect. But that's what it feels like. It feels like, oh, yeah, you're a fucking a nuisance. You're a nuisance, and we will like you. We make an offer to you. You either accept it or you decline and we, you know, spit on you on the way out. It's very weird and it's very disheartening. And I remember texting the Righteous Girlfriend just being like, I don't know. I don't think I'm cut out for this shit, which I'm not. I'm not cut out for it because I have too much integrity and too much pride to really, I think, mentally succeed in this business because you get used to the rejection and but this feels like, okay, so I made it to like step 8 of 10 on the way to the career I want. And it feels like, you know, often steps get harder, just like in a playoffs or something, that the final round can be the most difficult, of course, because competition gets stiffer or more elite. But it's like, you just want to know, what I really want to know is, when do I get courtesy and respect? And I guess the answer is never. And you know, as I've said before, as I've complained before, when your career is hinging on for so many years on just your own pride in your work, you feel like when that's disrespected, they're cutting to the core. Like when they're not treating you with any courtesy, professional courtesy, you can turn me down for a gig. But when you go that extra step of unnecessarily throwing in snide comments, you're just like, I'm not a fucking, this isn't my sophomore year of high school basketball. I'm a fucking 42-year-old man trying to advance a career. Now, maybe it's because you get treated like a bitch all day long by agents who don't give a fuck about your input or your opinion or what you're willing to pay. You just do what they say. Your job is to fucking count receipts, hire waiters and waitresses, and do what the agents say. So it must be your lucky fucking day when some ambitious fucking unconnected punk rolls in thinking that his talent and numbers and professionalism will get him respect. That's when you drop the fucking hammer. yeah, that was my week. So I, you know, the fact that it ended on such a high note, friend and listener of the show, showed up. Well, several fans showed up, and I'm sorry I didn't get to meet. I only got to see a friend of mine pre-show because I obviously knew him prior to, you know, I knew him from work from a few years ago. I'm sure he's beating off right now about getting mentioned on this podcast. but I know there were other fans in attendance, and I thank you for attending. If you do listen to this podcast, I couldn't stay because I had to run to catch the, it was a work night and I had to catch the 10:41 New Jersey Transit across town, or else the next train was like the 11:41. And I'm sorry, for a bar show on a Tuesday, I'm not staying up till 1 a.m. But I'm glad I went, And I hope if you're a Long Island resident, I hope that by the end of this week, I'll have a link up for Roy Wood's shows at Governor's in Levittown. But that was that's the power of comedy. I know that was just another one of JL's bitter, but you know, introspective and inside baseball moments that some of you enjoy. But it also showed how much comedy is still meaningful and uplifts me and is such a integral part of my sort of pride, because just getting on stage and murdering and then having it immediately rewarded by luck. There was no, you know, Roy Wood Jr. didn't have to be on that show. That was, I have no idea he was on the show until like 3 days before the show when it was on an Instagram story. But that's, you know, always ready. My motto and my the reason I have so many sketches on, if you look at my old sketches on YouTube, I've said this story, so I apologize if you're hearing this for the third time, but I was always paying a premium relative to other struggling comedians to have my videos shot and edited, because I felt like I write funny sketches and one day my work's going to be discovered and they'll see this body of work that's very impressive. Now, I made a shit ton of money last year on YouTube because a lot of people were watching my new videos, but also a lot of old videos that were tinkering around the like 1,800 to 4,000 view mark got up into the 20 and 30,000 views. And that pays as well. So that was great. And it paid off to have had a good body of work. So people, when they look up your stuff, they kind of almost do a double take and go, whoa, where's this guy been? Look at all this work. Look at all this good stuff, like not amateur hour. It was my amateur hour stuff that got me noticed, but then people could see that I could do more professional stuff. So I was always investing, you know, everything I had into a flexible work schedule so I could travel to do stand-up and hone my act, and spending whatever loose money I had to film what I believed were quality comedy sketches. But you need that luck, and the luck, you know, last year was the Easter video. The luck this year may be Roy Wood Jr. seeing me. I'm not pinning my hopes on that, but it's just a good, when I was having a bad day, the fact that I went home sort of just floating speaks to how the business of comedy continually eats at my soul. Whether it's seeing lip-syncing nonsense get elevated, whether it's having club owners not show just common professional respect, that part of the business that I keep craving because it's the way to get a career, it is the thing that keeps me up at night. It's the thing that gives me heart palpitations. It's the thing that, like, I soothe with a jar of Talenti because I'm, like, constantly fucking stressed. I was, like, not having trouble breathing last Tuesday. It wasn't like that, but I was, like, my heart was racing at the thought of turning down a gig in Utah because I wanted that gig. And I just said, you gotta put your integrity has to, like, I'm not talking about integrity over, like, you take the gig, you take a commercial because it pays if you want to be an actor. I get that. But I'm saying this was like, I think this gig, as much as I want to perform, and I bet you I'd have fun. Please, I have 15 minutes ready to go for a Utah audience about my life as a Utah jazz fan. One of the funniest jokes that I have yet to tell, because I was saving it for Utah, is about an ex-girlfriend. Hopefully Righteous is not listening to this one. No, but an ex-girlfriend who for Christmas one time, let's just put it this way, greeted me in a game at my present. My present was a game Paul Millsap jersey. And I was greeted at the door in a Mariah Carey in the Michael Jordan jersey dress fashion at the door. So I have a bit about, you know, I'm such a big Utah Jazz fan. I fucked Paul Millsap. So that, you know, you guys get to share in that. But that was one I had in, like, my back pocket, which would just resonate so much stronger out there. And I can talk about my life, like, things that don't necessarily, they're not pandering. You know, I'm sure every comic goes, the Utah Jazz, what kind of name is that? Or, hey, Stockton and Malone. But, like, I can go, deeper than just about anybody, and it's authentic and it's funny because I'm talking. And then I get into my rest of my set, but there's like a 10-minute, 15-minute like chunk that I really want to do out there. And Utah's beautiful. And also it didn't help that this guy was booking me for off season. So it was like, now if he had said like November, I would have been like, all right, I'll do November. Like, even though you're being a dick to me, because I want to go out there. But yeah, it was, my heart was racing. Like, I was like, am I going to turn this gig down? What the fuck am I doing? And I just did. And I felt good about it, 'cause I said, you know what, unless these shows rock, I'm going to be like, great. A 5-hour flight. Friday, 5-hour flight back Sunday morning. And it's not like these are, you know, this isn't a corporate gig where it's like a $5,000 for a, you know, fly in one day, fly out the next. Like, you're paying for the inconvenience of all that travel. So I turned it down, and then I immediately sort of felt better, but I was like bummed about my career. And then that Tuesday show made me feel much better. And then I had a show headlining in Newark on Friday night, and I, you know, the rust felt like it was off. I fucking annihilated. Did like 40, 38 minutes or 40 minutes. 35 minutes are all among my new 2020 and forward material. And one bit, which if you've heard it on, God, I can't sometimes, I think it's on the early version of this bit, I think, is on Israeli Tortoise. It's called, like, at the time, I guess it was 1916 versus 2016, about how relationships have changed. Well, I modified it for 2020 and, you know, to factor in COVID and stuff. And other than that bit, which was probably about 4 minutes and it's a fucking masterpiece, I destroyed with the new material. So I'm excited because that's the allure. That's the drug that I think the comedy industry can rely on with real comedians. You know, maybe this next generation of people who are like, I want to be a social media star. I'm not waiting for the clubs to give a shit about my craft or my work or my skills. I'm going to get famous, and then they're going to have to book me because I have overwhelmingly large followings. Even if I'm marginally funny or not a true stand-up or just a decent stand-up. Whereas people like me, I think you'd be betraying. It's easy enough to betray the business aspect of it, to say, well, fuck the business. You know what? I want to be happy with my life. I want a steady job. I don't want to be a drain on the people in my life, because I'm always talking about and obsessing over and depressed about whatever's going wrong with the business. That's the easy part to walk away from. Oh, I'm walking away from the terrible people who make me angry. That's not the difficult part. It's that all that work, you feel like you owe comedy. Like I know it's very big of me to say this, but I've always said one of my most depressing thoughts when it comes to comedy, and 2020, for personal reasons and societal, you know, made me think a lot more about mortality. I do think that social media makes death so much more big and then small. Like, I feel like we're cogs in a content machine. And like, you look and you're like, oh my God, they died. Oh my God, your mom died. Oh my God, your sister died. Oh my God, that celebrity died. And there's just, you get flooded with so much information that it's like, you stop and then you think, oh my God, was it like a year ago people's parents started dying from COVID? Like, we're already moving. Like individually, you don't move past it, but it just feels like we are part of what our information scheme is churning up and digitizing and turning into cogs. And I don't mean to sound like some radical fucking weirdo thinker, but it has made me think along those lines. And I said probably a couple of years ago that one of my biggest fears, and it's most likely going to come true, but is like, you know, I'll have my loved ones and some friends who will miss me if I die or whatever. But what bothers me more is, and maybe because I basically dedicated my adult life to it, and I believe so much in the comedy that I've put out, the idea that like some of my albums will just be nothing. They're already, in some ways, unless I keep reminding people, it's like, unless I get to some bigger level, you know, I love all my albums equally. But if I had to pick my favorites, no, it's Keep My Enemies Closer and Thoughts and Prayers. Now, do I think Half Blackface, the pending album that I'm working on right now, will be the pinnacle of my career? I think it will be. You can't know until you've recorded and finished it and worked on it. But I think it will be. So I'm already prepared for an album to equal or surpass those. But it's everything's so disposable now. I think movies, art is becoming like so... Oh, did you see that? Did you see that? Did you? Okay, and then we just move on. Just like life, I feel like art is now in this never-ending stream of new thing, new thing, new thing. Digital, you don't have a hard copy of anything. It's just, we just want to keep sitting and watching the next thing and the next thing. And I fear my albums, which, and I fear this as if I'm already some established legend in the game. But that's what bothers me most, is that forget the money from selling albums. I wish, and forget even like, oh, if a million people heard the album, then they'd become fans and then they'd sell tickets and my career would be made. Take all monetary and benefits from it other than knowing that people are listening to those albums. Like if you told me that 10 million people who like comedy would in the next year listen to Keep My Enemies Closer and Thoughts and Prayers, and it would... I would have to gain success and followers and everything independent of that fact. I would still wish for it because it's like I'm so proud of those and I think they are so elevated in terms of what comedy is now, stand-up wise, that it makes me sad to think they, and maybe it's I'm projecting my own fears about my own career and my own sadness about how stagnant my career can feel most of the time, that I projected, I've anthropomorphized two albums into being like, they deserve more. They're good kids. But like, those are the two albums where I'm like, I wish millions of people would hear those. Like, I wish those could get the audience of like Chris Rock's Bring the Pain. And I hope Half Blackface will most likely get the largest audience I've ever had just because of my bigger following. But I don't want it to just be bigger, like, hey, like instead of 200 people buying it, you know, 700 people bought it. And instead of 1,000 people streaming it, 3,000 people streamed it. That's all good. But that's once again, it's like, oh, good, that pays the rent for 2.5 months. Cool, understandable. That's always a benefit, but it's like, it's not about that. Like, I feel like my comedy is, but anyway, This shit I'm working on right now, the jokes, the bits, the it's coming together very nicely, and that leads us nicely into 5 shows in the DC area this week. Now the early shows on Thursday and Saturday have already sold out, and we're close to selling out the late shows on Thursday and Saturday. But if you're listening to this and you're a fan of mine, or you have friends or fans or family members that you know in the DC, Maryland, Virginia area, please tell them to go to the calendar page on my website. Arlington, Virginia, the show is, I want to say, 9 o'clock, might be 9:30. Still a few tickets left for that one. And then Friday is an outdoor show in Sterling, Virginia. So tickets are starting to pick up, I'm told, for that. That was the last show added, but it is a Friday and it's outdoors, so even sort of skeptical people in the area hopefully will attend. You know, I mean, hesitant people who don't want to be around unvaccinated people will hopefully show up to that. And then Saturday, we should probably, I would think, sell out the second show in Rockville, Maryland. But yeah, please, I'll be doing, you know, a full headlining set with a few impressions and basically... you know, 38 of 42 minutes will be the new shit. So you can hear a lot of the good new shit coming along for the next album, which I hope to record, you know, August, September-ish, assuming I keep getting some gigs here and there to really refine my stuff. But that's the problem also with no agent, is I can't put together a tour and know that I'm locked in for these like 40 shows to really work out an hour. It's going to be more piecemeal again, like my career has always been, because I just have to, when people reply to my emails is when I can book a gig. So it's for everything I've done, but I'm still at the whim of a club owner returning my email and reading my email, as we discussed, I think last week, that, you know, sometimes they just reply to you and, you know, ignore what you actually wrote to them. So that's all good, and obviously, I will keep making this pitch until June 10th, but Hopefully you sense my urgency regarding the kind of condescending tone I got about looking to book other clubs. Hartford is not going to be the end of my career. I will just keep pursuing independent venues and other venues that might be interested in having me. But it certainly can be a help or a real hindrance, depending on how that show sells. So once again, if you're a Connecticut person or a Boston person, please consider coming out to that Thursday show, getting your friends together. I promise you a killer show. For real, it's going to be awesome. My friend Chris, friend of the show, friend in real life, Chris Lamberth, is opening for me. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be awesome. The comedy will be awesome. All I am hoping is that, you know, if you're able to, that you can come through with, you know, you and a friend or you and a family member, or that if you know friends in the relative vicinity who are big fans of what I was doing last year or are still fans of what I'm doing and they don't know, let them know. 'Cause selling that out would be, I think, is probably going to be not easy. But even selling robustly would be great. But I'd love to obviously sell out the show. And all those ticket links are on my website. You know, check in now. Well, check in now for sure for the DC area shows. So only one other thing, and this I couldn't even see my mom this weekend because the day job, which has been so conveniently slow, picked up at a frightening pace. So, as sometimes happens, a very labor intensive, time sensitive assignment. So I spent all Sunday at my computer until about, with several breaks, obviously, but till about 11 p.m. And I'm going back to work right after I finish talking to you. So hopefully I'll get to see my mom before I leave for D.C. or after. But I talked to her, and I said Happy Mother's Day. So I did my bare minimum. But I was going to say I'm on to season 2 of Mr. Mercedes. I finished season 1 of Mr. Mercedes on Peacock. Obviously, I can't vouch for season 2 or 3 yet, but season 1 was truly superb. Right up there is one of, if not my favorite, Stephen King adaptation, based on like having read the book and then seeing how well they cast it and how well they expanded some things. And then I realized it was David Kelly, was the sort of, I guess, showrunner or big writer on the show. And he's the guy who's, you know, sort of a TV legend, but his most recent huge thing was, I think he was the person behind, Big Little Lies, right? I always get confused. There's Big Little Fires, Big Little Lies, Pretty Little Liars, et cetera. Little Fires Everywhere. Isn't that like, I made a joke about this like a year or two ago on social media, but the point is the one with Reese Witherspoon and Nicole Kidman that I really liked the first season of, that I thought was absolutely great. He was behind that. So it's Mr. Mercedes, I can vouch so far. The first 2 seasons are free on Peacock. I have the full platinum level membership with Peacock, so I'm going to be able to watch the 3rd season as well, and I watch without commercials. Not afraid of watching commercials. But season 1, I loved. I thought it was so good, and I thought Brendan Gleeson, who I had basically envisioned as the character while reading the book, was cast as the lead character, and it's really good. This first season. So I would recommend it if you're looking for a show. Better than most Stephen King adaptations. I also watched The Stand on Paramount Plus, and it was good, but it was not great. And people may be nostalgic for the ABC miniseries from years ago. That wasn't good either. Like, that was just good because probably we were all like 15 when that shit aired, or 13, and it was like, this is dark. That sucked. That ABC miniseries sucked. Just like the ABC miniseries of It was the shit when I was 12. And then I watched it again. I was like, some of this acting is horrible. So then they made a 19-hour, 2-part movie instead, where the first part was really good and the second part was not so much. I thought Mr. Mercedes season one, which is based on the first book of the trilogy, was excellent. So I would recommend it, and I'll keep you updated on the next seasons. And then I'm finally, before Loki, because I do want to watch Loki on Disney Plus, I've decided, okay, fuck it, I'll watch WandaVision and Captain Soldier and the Falcon. Whatever. I'll watch those two. I was trying to take a break from Marvel, but it's Marvel's world and we're just sitting in it getting fat. But I do want to watch Loki. So I figure, even though I know they're not connected, I figure yeah, they'll probably connect them just to fuck with me. So I'll be watching those also when I'm done with Mr. Mercedes. But I did watch Invincible. I was hearing so much hype about it. Everybody on social media was saying, Invincible. And I was like, why is everybody getting into that Mark Wahlberg football movie? I love the Mark Wahlberg football movie, by the way, about Vince Papale, the bartender who became like a special teams player for the Eagles. I really do. I own that movie. I enjoy it thoroughly. But then I realized, it's a cartoon. All right. It's like a graphic novel cartoon. So I watched it, and I watched it in 2 days. And it was good. I like J.K. Simmons as an actor. I actually didn't like him for the voice of the, whatever his name is, Infinity Man or, if you watch the show, you know who I'm talking about. It was good. It was very graphic novel-y, and the violence and the animation, I guess, was supposed to be like that. Correct me if I'm wrong. In the Podomatic notes, please, everybody, don't forget to leave your feedback there. Just boost the algorithm for the show. And if you haven't, please give a 5-star review on Apple. I'd like to get up to 200 reviews and ratings. So please, if you haven't, I'd appreciate a 5-star click, and a review would be even nicer on Apple. So thank you for that in advance. But I did think, I was like surprised that people were like, this is like an amazing show. I don't get sort of, I guess, the comic book graphic novel culture where people like, I see great thrown around, and don't get me wrong, TV is obviously where it's at. There's so much money there that it's drawing all the best talent. Not all the best talent, but most of the best talent. More opportunities and more diversity and more money, it seems, going into all the streaming platforms. But Invincible, I was just like, this was good. I enjoyed it. It was like, okay. But I was not like, oh my God. Like, I was like, oh my God, for The Boys. Like, when I watched the first season of The Boys, I was like, oh my God, that was fucking awesome. And I loved season two of The Boys, too. So I can't put it up on that level, but people like what they like. But I just feel like we're still in that game of, people just throw around great. Like, if you don't say something's great, people treat it like you said it sucks, and people seem to really want to think things are great. Like I said, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe it's like just such a great graphic novel replication for a show or something. I don't know. But it was like, I was entertained. I would watch a next season, but I wouldn't, unlike The Boys, which would be sort of like that Friday appointment viewing for me, I would watch Invincible. The only reason I'd probably watch it, unfortunately, quickly is because I just feel like there's going to be so many spoilers and people discussing right away online. So I kept having, once I decided to watch it, I kept having to like be like, shut off the phone, start watching it immediately before everybody gives away everything. But yeah, J.K. Simmons, even though I'm a huge fan of him as an actor, I didn't kind of like his voice for that main character. He doesn't have a voice that feels like waspy, mustached guy to me. But yeah, I would, if I had to pick out of just matching up season one versus season one, I would recommend Mr. Mercedes season one over Invincible season one. But I'd say both are worth watching. I kind of want to watch this new Peacock show about like the girl band. What is it called? Like Girls Five Ever, I think, or something like that. I guess nothing else to report. Thank you for letting me get all that off my chest. I know some of you maybe feel like sometimes the show's too negative and you prefer the manic episodes rather than the depressive episodes, but that was just more matter of fact and taking into my psychology, I guess, of why I keep doing comedy, because you get beat down, you get depressed, you wonder if it's worth it, and then you know, you dust off your killer skills and at least, you know, that sadly that makes it all worth it. But it comes at a little bit of a cost. Like a lot of the time you're not happy. And the better you are, the better you are, the more frustrating the disrespect becomes. And I think sometimes I find myself in that position where I'm going, okay, now it feels extra rage-inducing because now I've got all the things, I've got all the tools, except you still can't get common decency or respect. So with that said, I think I've hit on all that I wanted to talk about. I will be hopefully announcing later this month more shows. I wish I could just tell everybody, hey, motherfuckers, I'm coming to these 20 cities, but this is the way right now that I have to do it. Is piecemeal. So hopefully you're all signed up for my newsletter, my monthly newsletter, which is really the only and best way to be sure that you see announcements from me. But I'm working on all sorts of different cities, and I'm hoping that, you know, this month or next month, a lot of them start to finally read my emails and reply, especially the clubs that I've worked. That's the one that's sort of most frustrating, is that like half of the clubs I've contacted are clubs that I've worked multiple times. So you start to go, why now? Why, you always used to work with me and now I'm bigger. So I still want to work with you. So what gives? But now I got to get back to work. The work that doesn't bring me joy, but doesn't also rip out my heart and make me want to go postal. So we all have trade-offs, folks. So have a good week. Hopefully more and more of you are getting vaccinated. If you're not yet vaccinated, what are you waiting for? Go get vaccinated. Don't be like Tucker Carlson. Be like J.L. Covan. So have a great week. Stay safe. Stay healthy. I hope to see lots of you in Washington, D.C., or the, you know, the surrounding cities of Washington, D.C., to be more specific. And I will see you next Tuesday.